Okay, friends and neighbors, you all know what that means. It's time once again for the rock and roll shrink to unleash upon thee. I hope everyone has weathered whatever storms life may have come your way. If you live in the South, particularly in Alabama or Georgia, I mean that in the most literal of senses, since we got pummeled last week with a pretty nasty little snowstorm. Well, you know, nasty for us is, you know, nothing like an acorn falling from a tree for folks in Yankee Land or in the Midwest. Certainly, when I was in Ohio, this would have been laughed at, but most of us in this area aren't very well prepared, and I'm afraid it took quite a toll on a cacophonous result in our lives for a couple of 3 or 4 days. At any rate, I certainly weathered the storm, pun intended, and stayed in my happy little patooties home doing all these domestic things that I love doing. Well, some of which I love doing, cooking being foremost amongst them. I joke with all of my buddies saying I'd make somebody a good wife, but maybe not. You know, I'd probably have to shave a lot closer, but, you know, what the heck. Anyway, as the introductory piece suggests, we're going to be talking about relationships today in both a generic and kind of a way that I suspect some people hadn't anticipated, which is the relationship that we have with ourselves, which frankly is the most important relationship we can ever have. And if we don't establish that early on, and I don't mean necessarily early on in our lives, but if we don't have a good grasp on that, you're certainly not going to be able to have a meaningful relationship with somebody else or anything else for that matter. Since it being in a relationship with someone else sort of infers that you have a piece of you to share with or donate to the couple, shall we say, if you're in a you know, more of a traditional dyadic type relationship, or even with a bunch of friends. I mean, forget, you know, more long-term intimate kinds of things, but even with friends, I mean, you know, you can't share who you are if you don't know who you are to begin with as a person, and particularly if you've avoided it and put up all these masks all your life so that, you know, the real person never shows through because you're either unconsciously unaware that you're scared witless to discover who you are, so you put up all these little faces and masks. And as I've said before, for those of you who don't know, from the Greek, persona literally means mask. And so I find a lot of folks running around wearing masks, and some people know they're doing it, and some people don't have a clue they're doing it because they don't have a clue of who the heck they are, because they define themselves in ways that have nothing to do with the real them. Or as Pete Townsend might say, you know, can you see the real me? certainly the piece I played earlier was, you know, intimating a relationship, looking for a relationship with another person in a more, you know, traditional sort of dyadic, so-called quote-unquote vanilla type Christian, whatever, you know, person-on-person relationship with someone who has a good heart. But what I would argue is that first we have to look inside ourselves. We have to know who the heck we are and what the heck we are, and be okay with the who and what we are. And we can't assume that the who and what we are is what we do for a living or how many people we associate with in high offices politically or how much money we have in the bank or how long our sexual members or secondary sexual characteristics might be or, you know, whatever, because the us that's us is certainly different from all of those physical attributes and or financial or political or power or whatever we think we have. You know, the real us has nothing to do with any of that. The real us is, you know, what's deep down inside. You know, what do you do, you know, when the fit hits the shan? You know, how do you, who are you in your purest sense? You know, without all the garb, without all the nice clothes and the big cars and the women or guys or, you know, donkeys or whatever your thing is in your sexual stable, shall we say, pun intended. You know, it's, you know, it has nothing to do with any of that stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I talk to my folks about, you know, is that, you know, people come in and it, you know, usually the first time when people see me in my office, you know, they have this image of what a quote unquote doctor, a professional is supposed to be. And I certainly, from a physiological standpoint, at least from the neck up, often surprise folks because I'm not what most people think I am in terms of my looks. You know, because we all judge, and I'm guilty of this too, if I'm not really mindful of my own pathology. We, you know, we judge people on appearance a lot, especially first impressions. And, you know, part of it's just reminding ourselves that that's just window dressing, you know. And maybe somebody looks really good, but, you know, it's kind of like those cakes you used to see as a kid at some of the PTA meetings, you know, where the moms would make all these great-looking cakes and they looked just fabulous on the outside and you bit into them and they tasted like you-know-what warmed over. It was like, oh, my frickin' God. You know, something so pretty on the outside was so horrible on the inside. And I find that analogy to be true a lot of people in our society, unfortunately, in my personal opinion. But, you know, keep in mind I'm also somewhat of a misanthrope. And so you have to take that comment with a grain of salt. Be that as it may, I mean, even people back in, you know, ancient days, and you've heard me say this before, that most of your ancient folks were so much smarter than we are. It just, sometimes it really just befuddles, amazes, and occasionally pisses me off at how smart some of these people were. I mean, you know, how did people like, you know, Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and Kant and Hegel and Newton and, you know, Da Vinci and all these people, oh my frickin' God, I mean, they didn't have, you know, the internet, they didn't have libraries, they created the stuff that's in our libraries, for God's sake. And, you know, many of you probably know, you know, the famous Socrates quote of the unexamined life is not worth living. And I would completely and heartily agree with that, not just because I'm Greek, but because that's a very true statement. You know, this was not a guy to play around with insinuating, well, you might want to kind of look at yourself. Oh, no. I mean, he just comes out and says it. You know, you got to love a man or woman who speaks his or her mind. I mean, you got to love it. You know, most of you folks have certainly heard me say over the history of these podcasts that my definition of political correctness is somebody who doesn't have the intestinal fortitude, the guts, the honor, the balls, whatever you want to call it, to tell the truth the way he or she sees it. And therefore, I have zero use for political correctness or politicians in general. But you guys and gals know that by now also. I sort of liken them to the stereotypic bad used car dealer. And, you know, that certainly is not limited to our current administration. That I think that goes back as far as, you know, I can remember. Well, my father used to say when he was still alive that, you know, this was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that we don't have statesmen anymore. Politicians are not statesmen. You know, statesmen are people who are public servants who take pride and honor in their job and see it as a calling. And politicians are basically used car dealers in fancy suits trying to sell us positions so that we can subsidize their sexual cavortations, their pocketbooks, and their egos with power. And I would not disagree with him. He and I didn't agree on a lot, but that's something I would definitely agree with him wholeheartedly on. At any rate, most of us really think we are who we pretend to be. You know, it's like, you know, say people come into the office and they see the term doctor, or they, you know, they walk into my office and they see me and they're like, oh my gosh, and now they're seeing this guy with, you know, with very curly, long hair, you know, that looks more like he should be playing for Ozzy Osbourne or Aerosmith or something. And, you know, it takes folks by surprise, I think. And then they get sort of a second jolt because they come into the office and they see the multitude of diplomas and degrees and licenses and certifications and honors that I have on my wall, and you know, you can sort of see this disconnect in their eyes. And I have to say, I get sort of a semi-evil glee out of that. I've always taken, for some stupid reason, I've always taken sort of a kind of a mischievous pleasure out of getting people a disconnect, and that's certainly one disconnect that I seem to do with folks. And it's really interesting because they don't get how somebody can be smart and have a bunch of stuff and still not look like a quote-unquote real doctor, at least from the neck up. You know, and I keep trying to tell those folks, and I tell the folks that I work with, you know, those who stick with me are not scared witless of me on first sight or my bluntness, because most folks know who work with me, I'm pretty blunt about stuff. I'm not usually rude, and I try very hard not to say things that are going to be perceived as rude or hurtful or arrogant or whatever, but I'm human. I do make mistakes, and I do occasionally come across, I think, to some folks as being uncaring and blunt and kind of cold and, you know, robotoid and just the facts, ma'am. But, you know, I tell it the way it is, or at least the way I perceive it to be, and I don't believe that I do folks a service by weaving fairy stories. And by the same token, I'm a pretty good judge of me, and I've taken a long time to get to know me and who I am and all of my splendiferous glory and all of my horribly deficit pathological tendencies as well. And I think I know my strengths and my weaknesses pretty well. And I have no problem stating either to most people. I'm pretty open booky about that kind of stuff. I really don't feel that somebody can be in my business and try to hide behind a bunch of degrees and act like some haughty, you know, jerk because somebody has a bunch of stuff on the wall and letters after his or her name doesn't give them the right to act any differently. It's like I tell most of my kids that I work with, both at the bad boy school where I work, as I jokingly call the one of the schools I do groups for, the alternative schools for difficult youth, as well as most of the folks that I see in my office, patients I work with, or their parents or family or whatever. You know, I wouldn't do drugs if drugs were legalized tomorrow because they're just not good for you. And frankly, people who do drugs, I have never seen a happy, and I've said this before, I've never seen a self-confident, happy, self-aware, self-accepting drug abuser or drug addict ever. Ever, never, ever. There is no such animal, in my personal opinion, right? Because I think most addicts are running from themselves. They're running from who they think they are and who they're afraid they're going to be. And that's the crappy part of this whole thing. When whether your addiction is sugar or whether your addiction is relationships, which a lot of people are addicted to being in relationships, why do you think that is? Because they get into relationships to run away from the knowledge and awareness of who they are. And they think somehow if they can just pour themselves into a relationship and form this dyadic or triadic or polyadic or whatever situation with a friend, close friends or family or lovers or husbands, wives, whatever, that they can somehow, you know, mold together with this other person and not have to look at themselves. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, if you don't know who you are, how the heck can you give who you don't know to somebody and share that person with another person if you don't know who the hell that person is, particularly if you don't like that person that you think you might be or you're scared witless of finding out? Holy moly, how the hell can you have a relationship? Well, the answer is you can't. You don't have a relationship with yourself, so how the hell can you have a relationship with anybody else? Friend, family, lover, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, concubine, whatever? Well, of course you can't. And in my personal opinion, that's why the divorce rate is so just voluminous of this country, and why we have so many relationships that people are just willing to run into, and then they're looking to escape themselves. They're running from themselves. You cannot run from yourself. Wherever you go, there you are. And that's what that old saying means. It means you can't run from yourself. You know, or as Glenn Frey and Don Henley might say, you know, you can't hide your lion eyes. You know, you can't get into anything with anybody that means a damn thing if you don't know who you are. And you can't do that in an afternoon. This is a ongoing project that people have to start at some point and really look hard at themselves and analyze who they are, apart from who their parents said they were, their friends say they are, their girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, their enemies, their economic institutions, their religious institutions, their educational institutions. You got to see who you really are. What do you do? And you know, my sort of rule of thumb is, you know, you separate the real people from the plastic people, the real people from the personas, when you see what somebody does when the fit hits the shan, right? And one of my favorite authors, music authors, says, that's part of what he's saying in his song, When he talks about, when the lesser men have everything and the greater ones have naught, will you hold on to morality with the treasures you have wrought? Or will you sell your expertise, your knowledge, and your soul for a piece of false security in the land of dark and cold? Or will you take the gift promised you by ancients bold, allowing you to have and then to hold? What Mark's talking about is being true to yourself and holding on to this core that you have inside yourself. But if you don't know what that core is, if you don't know what the core is made up of, if you're afraid of the core, or you don't like what the core is, you have no anchor to hold on to, right? And so people say, you just kind of give yourself to God or Allah, Buddha, or, whatever. Well, that's fine and dandy, but you got to know who it is you're giving to this deity or deities or whatever. I'm sorry, God can't do the work for you. You got to get off your butt and give him or her or it or whatever, however you see this thing or things or whatever, force, whatever. You got to give that person or entity a little help here, right? You got to give of who you are, but you got to know who you are first. And you can't do that by taking drugs. You can't do that by running to Puerto Vallarta to escape what you're feeling or to have a good time and then come back and be miserable at job. You just can't do it. You've got to find out who the hell you are. One of these things, recently, I'm sure many of you are aware, if not most of you, of the recent tragedy. We lost another famous person to drugs very recently, a very fine actor. And I'm certainly not slamming this individual in any way, shape, or form, because my heart goes out to this person and this person's family and loved ones, as it does always when these sorts of tragedies happen. But, they were interviewing, I saw an interview with a bunch of, folks that run addiction places, and they say, why are drugs on the rise, and why are all these famous people and all these people in general, resorting to drugs and all this stuff? And, this person's answer was, because they're so available and they're cheap. And, that may be true, but drugs have always been available, and drugs have always, people can find a way to get them, cheap or not, okay? In my personal opinion, that's horse manure. The reason people run to drugs is because they want better living through chemistry. They want to escape the hell that they put themselves in. They want to escape who they are because they don't know who they are and they're scared witless to find out. And they think somehow they're going to find it in a needle or a bottle or in a joint or in a pill or in some liquid or what the heck ever. And it isn't there. It's never going to be there. And until you pony up to the bar of life and really take a good and hard look at yourself, both the good stuff and the not so good stuff and the mediocre stuff and the great stuff, you're not going anywhere. You're not developing as a person. And you sure as hell don't know who the heck you are. And if you give your entire life that way, then, Socrates' statement is correct. Your life has been for naught. You've lived for nothing. You've lived running, right? Which is why a lot of people who are in the military will know this axiom about a coward dies many deaths and a brave man only once. And that's because the coward's like scared witless and dying inside, so to speak, every time something comes up. Well, people that do drugs are the same way in general. People who experiment with drugs and do this kind of stuff to escape to looking at themselves, or people who get into relationships to escape looking at themselves, or buy more candy or donuts or guitars or jewelry or houses in, the Bahamas or what the heck ever, it's an escape and avoidance, and it's never going to be anything, and you're always living in fear and looking over your shoulder. Like you screwed somebody in the mafia and you're always having to look, two steps behind you for the hitman coming after your ass, right? It's the same kind of dilly. Right, except the hitman is you, and you can't run from you. Right? There was another famous philosopher, Santayana, who I think said something about that. That's the guy that's credited with the phrase that he who does not remember the past is condemned to repeat it. Right? Well, he who doesn't know, or she who doesn't know who he or she is, can't do anything but run and create a lot of mess in his or her way as that person is going through life. And what's even worse is, think about it. If you don't have your fecal material together, figuratively, so to speak, and you don't know who the heck you are, you're going to be wandering into relationships. In some cases, you're going to be staying into relationships that aren't worth staying into because you think you can't do any better. You're settling. Nobody should ever settle. That's ridiculous. You know, it is absolutely ridiculous, right? And even if you're unaware of what your, you know, subconscious or unconscious, or whatever you call it, programming and messages and scripts are, you're going to repeat them just because you don't know they're there doesn't mean you're not going to run from them. You know, you can't touch air, but you don't get air, you die. It's the same kind of principle. You cannot run from yourself. You just can't. And if you don't and really take a stop and look at yourself, right, you are never going to know who you are. You're never going to fulfill yourself, right? Gray would say in Elegy written in a country churchyard, who knows what mute and glorious Milton lies here, right? You have no way of knowing who or what you can be if you don't ask yourself, who am I really? When I take all these degrees off the wall, who am I really? And that's the message I tell most of my people. You know, if tomorrow all those degrees go away, all the accrediting institutions that I'm accredited by and licensed by and certified by and all the educational institutions I attended said, you know what, we decided you're a schmuck and we're taking all this shit from you. Who am I then? Well, you know what? I'm the same guy I was when I had that shit on the wall. I haven't changed. I'm no different. I'm the same core person I was before I had that stuff. I'll be the same core person if that stuff gets taken away tomorrow. That is who I am. Not that stuff on the wall. Not the jillions of guitars and musical equipment that I own. Right? You know, that's not me. You know, I go back to the Gestalt thing that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. You can't add up all my guitars and basses and amps and musical equipment, and you can't add up all my degrees and licenses and certifications and honors and yada, 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 and add up how many, you know, times I go to the gym and all the stuff I cook and add all that up and equals, and there's this picture of me, right? You can't do it. I'm a whole lot more than that. And so is everybody who's listening to this podcast. But you don't know it, and you don't know who it is, and you don't know what it is unless you stop and put the brakes on your life and really examine it. Really look at it. Right? William James, one of the founders of psychology, was a big proponent of this introspection, this looking inside yourself and examining who and what you are and why do you do stuff. You don't know you're going to be repeating the same stuff over and over and over. Right? You can't get away from it. The problem is, if you look at our society, our society really emphasizes other people doing their work for you. You know, our current administration is in Washington is a really good example of that. Oh, we're going to take care of you, right? Big brother. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. Nobody's going to take care of your patooties unless you do it. You've got to look at yourself. You know, part of the reason we have all these drug addicts is we're looking for somebody to do our work for us. And when he doesn't have it, we don't like the way we feel. And so we want to feel better right now, immediately. Boom, instant gratification. Look at the commercials we have on television. You know, are you having a bad day? It's Miller time, right? And I'm not slamming Miller beer. Please don't mishear me. It's, you know, it could be Chuck U. Farley beer. It wouldn't matter. You know, you look at the people they have in those ads. Those people are not ugly people for the most part. They're good-looking folks, whether they're male or female. They're often wearing scanty clothes or wearing very expensive clothes or driving very expensive cars. They're at parties laughing and joking and talking to each other and having a great time, right? You don't see a bunch of miserable people in those commercials. That's because they're not selling the product. They're selling you this instant gratification that if you drink this beer, if you smoke this cigarette, if you own this car, if you live in this neighborhood, if you wear these clothes, if you wear this perfume, if you wear this jewelry, you too can be as gorgeous, happy, successful, loving, sweet, popular, fill in the blank. It's instant gratification. Are you having a headache? It's extra, extra strength, whatever. The strongest pain medication you can get without a prescription. And we wonder why we have drug addicts. The message we're having is we are entitled, quote unquote, to feel good at all times. We're not entitled to anything else. And if we're suffering and we have to work too hard, that nasty four-letter word, you've heard me use that obscene word lots on these podcasts. You're going to hear it a lot more before this stuff is over and before they put me in the ground. You're going to hear this word 1,000 jillion more times because there's no substitute. right? Work, except no substitutes, right? It takes work to look at yourself. It takes courage to look at yourself. It takes diligence and willpower. And, you know, you do it in spite of the fact that you're scared witless. I mean, you guys have, and gals have heard me say before, courage is not the lack of fear. It is not. People who are courageous are just as scared for the most part as the rest of us schmucks. Just the folks who we label as heroes do what the rest of us aren't willing to do. They man up or woman up to their own fears and do what they're supposed to do regardless. They do it despite the fact that they're scared witless. That's courage. And it takes courage to look at yourself and really do it honestly and don't kid yourself. Right? But if you can't look at who you are, you don't know who you are in any situation. And what are you going to do when the fit hits the shan? As Mark says, when the lesser men have everything and the greater ones have naught, what are you going to do? Most people sell out. They take the easy route, or they drug themselves with, you know, some kind of drug, whether the drug is sugar or whether the drug is cocaine or whether the drug is alcohol or whether the drug is spending or sexing or texting or, you know, whatever. Right? We have to really, 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 really look at ourselves. And if you have trouble doing that, find somebody who knows you, who cares about you, who gives a flip about you, who has some sense of you, and get them to give you some reflections. Go back and contemplate it. You know, go seek counseling from somebody who you think is going to tell it like it is or as they see it, not what you want to hear like so many people in my profession do. And no offense to anybody when I say that, but most of the people in my profession, in my personal opinion, are a bunch of gutless wonders who wouldn't say if they had a mouthful, right? Oh, no, you can't say that. Watch me, right? You're not doing somebody a favor if you BS them. When I take my car in, you guys have heard me say this before, when I take my car in to the auto mechanics, and all of you folks, ladies and gentlemen out there know, what I know about auto mechanics or electronics would sit on the head of the smallest pin you could possibly find, right? When I take my car in to the mechanic, my mechanic doesn't go, well, what do you think's wrong with this engine? How does that make you feel? How the hell do you think it makes me feel when the car stops in the middle of traffic and I almost get killed? I mean, you know, if I knew what was wrong with this flipping thing, I wouldn't be paying your ass to fix it. I wouldn't be bringing it in here if I was so dang up smart. I'm not smart when it comes to this stuff. I know I'm not smart. I'm not lying to anybody, especially myself. I'm bringing it to you because you've already proven to me that you're smart and you give a flip and you're honest. Fix it. Call me when it's ready. Tell me how much I owe you. Right? I don't want them to give me some sopso story. If I need a new engine, I don't want them to say, well, we're just going to grease the axle a little bit. You'll be fine for at least another 100 miles before you blow the heck up on, you know, Highway 400. I don't want a fairy story. I want the truth. I don't always like what people tell me, but if somebody's telling me what they honestly believe to be true, I have to respect the fact that they had the courage to say that, because that takes courage. And don't lie to yourself. That takes a whole lot of courage that a lot of people don't seem to have these days. Right? But if you don't man up or woman up and be honest with yourself, if you don't see who you really are, how can you know who you are? How can you give yourself to God, for God's sake, or any other deity you may worship? Or if you're, you know, an atheist or, you know, a agnostic, how can you give yourself over to nature? How can you love a tree and hug a tree and expect a tree to love you back if you don't know who you are when you're communing with the tree? I mean, I don't mean to be stupid, but seriously. You know, but our society doesn't encourage that. Oh, you don't feel good? Here, take this pill. Drink this alcohol. Go buy something. Go get laid. Right? Look at our TV. Immediate gratification. Somebody's going to take care of me. We do everything to limit self-awareness in this country, at least in my personal opinion. Our society discourages it. You know, if that's not working for you, get out and work harder. Make more money. Money will buy you happiness. Yeah, right. Well, money will buy you a lot of stuff, and I'm not knocking money. Believe me, I'm not knocking it. Nobody likes money more than I do. But what I like more than that is earning money the honest way, and I like liking myself when I get the money to put in my bank account. Right? So if you're living for money, you're addicted to money, you know, you end up being Silas Marner, this is not a good idea either. Right? You really, really, really are, you know, kind of busting society's balls in a sense, if you're one of the odd men or odd women out who are actually taking steps to stop and smell the coffee, and contemplate who and what you are. Because honestly, you can't make any rational decision, whether it's work, home, sex, relationships, friendships, nothing. Because all of those mean you're giving part of who you are to another person. You're sharing that with another person, whether it's friend or whatever. Well, how can you share what you don't know? That's like going into a studio to play a song that you have no clue what the chords are. Oh, yeah, I've heard that song before. I want to play that song. Well, that's great. Okay, here we go. The studio clock is running. It's $300 an hour. Go, do your part. He said part. You know, hello. Life is the same way. You have to know who and what you are before you go into the studio to start recording stuff. Right? You can't live a fantasy life. You can't, you know, a lot of people do. They you know, space out. They eat comfort food, or they watch TV programs, or they vegetate, or they make themselves depressed, or make themselves anxious. They develop these mental problems, right? To some degree, that's an escape and avoidance, right? If you're sitting around on your butt being depressed, especially if you're taking pills and you're not trying to do something about the depression, that's an escape and avoidance. No offense to anybody who experiences depression, because I know it's a bear and I've been there before and it's not fun. But if you're really depressed or if you're really anxious and stressed out, stop doing it to yourself. You have a choice. You can change what you're doing. Find the source of your unhappiness. Find the source of your stress and do as much as you can to change it. You can't always change other people or the environment. That's for dang, I'm sure. But you can sure change how you look at it. You can take a situation that most people consider very undesirable, and you can make it less undesirable in your head, right? Or Shakespeare would say, you know, there is nothing that is good nor bad that thinking does not make it so, right? Which means we're all responsible for our emotions, right? Which means we have to own it. But that's another, you have to know you're doing it. You have to accept the fact you're doing it. You have to be aware of that you're doing it and how you're doing it. Because otherwise, you are at the mercy of a bunch of pills. Or you're at the mercy of staying in somebody like me's office for the next 25 years. That's not helpful. I don't do anybody a service by keeping them in therapy for 20 years and not teaching them how to do their stuff themselves. The only thing I'm doing is pumping my bank account. Right, and again, I like money, but I don't like money earned at the expense of somebody else when I could be helping them do their own thing without me. That is my ultimate goal, is to make myself as obsolete as possible to the folks that I work with as soon as possible without just dropping them, you know, off a bridge and go, okay, start flapping your wings and fly. You know, I have to teach them how to fly. It doesn't do any good if I let them get on my back and I fly across all the time. I have to teach them how to do stuff. That's what I do in counseling with folks. I teach them to look at themselves. I teach them to be as self-sufficient as they can possibly be. You know, now some of us come with less cognitive equipment. Some of us come with certain genetic foobars through no fault of our own. You know, we all have the life that we were dealt to some degree, but we have to take the hand we were dealt and make the best of it. We can't just get pissed off and sad and upset and angry and bitter about it and blaming, you know, God or our genes or our parents the rest of our lives, because we're going to be sitting around on our patooties getting fat and pissed off and depressed and stressed out. And I, for one, have no use for that crap. You know, and that's part of the reason I do these podcasts. That's part of the reason I give these podcasts away to folks for free, right? Because I'm trying to empower people. You've heard me say many, many times on these podcasts, if you've listened to them, you know, more than three of them, you've heard me saying time and time and time and time again, take your flipping power back. Stop giving it away to people. Stop giving it away to society. Stop giving it away to the pill that you take to make you feel better. Stop giving it away to the donut that you eat, the comfort food that you eat when you feel bad. Start redefining comfort food. Most of the comfort food people eat when they don't feel well emotionally makes them sicker physically, which in turn makes them sicker emotionally, right? Or as George Harrison said many years ago, you know that what you eat you are, and what is sweet now is so sour. And that's true. The food you put in your mouth is chemically decomposed to pump your blood, your heart, your organs, your liver, and to feed your brain. So if you're breaking chemicals in food down and you're eating crappy food that has crappy chemicals in it, your brain has crappy chemicals to push those nerves around, to have your thoughts and your feelings. How the heck can you have appropriate, rational, sane, work-related, objective thoughts and feelings and appropriate ones matched to the environment, person, whatever, if you're eating crappy food? No flipping way. None. Zip, zero, the empty set. Much less clouding it with what most people consider drugs. Always remember, folks, the pharmacological definition of a drug is whatever you put in your body to be used for any kind of nutritional value whatsoever, which includes water, right, sugar, salt, protein, amino acids, chlorophyll, anything. The good drugs as well as the bad drugs. That's why a lot of times you'll hear me say, you know, what we're really talking about here is good drugs versus bad drugs, right? What's the definition of a good drug? One that your body needs that's going to help you out now, that isn't going to kick you in the patooties 3 weeks from now or 10 years from now, right? So if you're a person who has a chemical, some kind of chemical foobar in your brain through some genetic whatevers, and you're, you know, you can't have gluten because you have an allergy to it, then gluten's not a good drug for you. But gluten is not a bad chemical. It is just, it's not unless you have an allergy or sensitivity to it, right? Penicillin is a fabulous drug, but not if you're allergic to it like I am. It's not a good drug, right? So you got to know your chemistry. You got to know your history. You got to know what's good for you and what's not good for you. You got to know what your body needs and what it doesn't need, right? But you sure as heck don't need to be putting crap in there that almost nobody's body needs. You know, cocaine, heroin, you know, Dilaudids, Percodans, Percocets. We're not talking about people who have nerve damage or chronic pain. And even then, you know, most responsible pain clinics, and notice I said responsible pain clinics, don't knee-jerkingly give people narcotic analgesics if they're in pain. They look for alternatives. And one of the things I do with folks is teach them how to meditate and dissociate. Put their brain somewhere else. No brain, no pain. Think about it. The last time you hurt a body part, whether you scuffed your knee or, you know, broke your arm or twisted your ankle or, you know, cut your finger in the gym like I did, you know, a couple of months ago, being a dumbass as I usually am. The more you focus on the part that hurts, the more you send signals to your brain that that part hurts, the more aware and focused on that part that's hurting is, the more pain you're going to feel. Right? So you want to not feel pain, you have to put your brain someplace else. You have to focus on something else. Well, that's too much like that nasty four-letter word, work. I don't want to do that. I'll just pop a Percodan or a Percocet or a hydrocodone or a Dovon, right? Oh, yeah. No, I don't think so. Not unless you want to get, you know, addicted to that stuff. I mean, holy moly. You know, most of you folks know I had hernia surgery a couple of weeks ago, and one of my explicit instructions to the surgeon and the anesthesiologist is under zero circumstances are you to put any narcotic analgesics in my tube while I'm asleep when you're cutting on me so I won't feel pain. Do not use narcotic pain medication. Don't stick it in the little tube you're using to put glucose in me. I'll be very pissed off if I find out you've done that. And no, I don't want any of your pain pills taking that stuff home. I'm going to deal with it on my own. Thank you. I appreciate your concern, but no thanks. I gave it the office. Besides the fact, you're giving somebody a narcotic pain pill. What's the side effect of narcotics? Any of you heroin guys and gals out there? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Right? Well, let me tell you. Constipation. Okay? Now, how bad of an idea is this? You're cutting a guy in a, as Weird Al will say, tender location, you know, and you're giving him a narcotic that's going to constipate him? This is a bad idea, people. Bad. Okay? All right. So, no pain pills for me. I dealt with it on my own, and thank God I have plenty of experience doing that because of my chronic illness as a kid. And even though I wouldn't consider my chronic illness as a kid as a gift, it was sort of a dubious honor and sort of a kind of indirect result of me being in pain a lot as I learned to dissociate as a young kid. And at the time, I just thought I was playing some kind of weird mind game and I was kind of nuts and that was okay. And we all know from these podcasts, I'm a little nuts, but that's okay. But what I was doing as a kid was finding out a way to not focus on the pain so I wouldn't have to take all that crap they wanted to give me. And that has served me very well as an adult. That works for emotional pain too, by the way, right? Your endorphins, when you release your endorphins, your pain chemicals in your brain, you know, you can do a lot of stuff with pain. Your body is a pharmacological bountiful garden of delights if you know how to use it. And you don't have to take anything external to make yourself feel better. You've got opioid, you know, potentials in your brain. You've got cannabinoid potentials in your brain where you can release cannabinoids. You don't have to be smoking pot to get that stuff, right? But you got to know that. You got to have information. You got to know what your thresholds are. You got to start investigating. What do you do? How do I get close to myself? How do I get involved with myself? How do I discover who is me and who is not me? What are my shortcomings? What do I need to overcome my shortcomings or to minimize them or to try to avoid situations where they'll be exposed really badly and do me and or somebody else damage? Right? I cannot overemphasize this enough. So when I talk about relationships, you better have a relationship with yourself first before you even delusionally think about trying to get in a relationship with other people. And sadly, that's the very thing that my personal opinion is about 95% of the population has no flipping clue who they are. If you ask somebody who they are, they'll tell you, I'm a musician, I'm an athlete, I'm a doctor, I'm a politician, I'm a banker, I'm an architect, I'm an accountant. No. That's what you do. That's the role you play. That's not who you are. That's what you do for money. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you identify with who and what you do, you're in big trouble. That's why professional athletes have such a hard time when they retire. They get injured. They can't play their sport anymore. Everything has revolved around them as an athlete. Their whole identity is encapsulated in what they do. But that's not who they are. But they've been told that for as long as they can remember. And now their career's over, you know, at the ripe old age of 30 or 35 or whatever, right? And now they're going, what the hell am I going to do now? Right? And they're trying to live off promotions and endorsements and all this kind of stuff. And some of them, you know, parlay that into a really great, source of income. I mean, one of the things that, Arnold Schwarzenegger was so good at doing is, you know, being a professional bodybuilder and athlete, you know, he segued into the acting field. Right? That was a very smart thing for him to do. You can't be a bodybuilder all your life at the level. And, you know, he got into politics and he's done a bunch of stuff. So he's diversified, right? That little catchword, right? So he's not the politician. He's not the actor. He's not the athlete. He's some combination of all those things. And, you know, gosh knows who the real him is, right? Because I sure don't, because I don't know him that well, obviously. So that's my whole point, people. You can't identify with who you are with what you do. Who you are is much more than that. Who you are is much more than your body, the money in the bank. It's much more than that. But you have to take the time and energy and effort, work, to look at yourself. And if you don't know where to start, contact somebody like me in my profession that really is going to be honest and gives a flip and going to get you to explore that. Talk with a really, really close friend. A good buddy, a parent, a lover, a wife, a husband, a brother, a father, whatever. And if you don't have anybody close, you don't think you haven't been honest with them, or you haven't really shown them who you are because you're scared, then come see somebody like me who's a stranger who you have nothing to lose by exposing yourself to. That's the beauty of coming to counseling, right? Because you're in it. I mean, obviously people don't want to look bad in front of anybody for the most part, but that's the whole part is you're in a relationship with somebody who is going to tell it to you, hopefully, the way it really is, in a way, hopefully, that you can hear it, that you won't be totally freaked out, upset, embarrassed, pissed off, hurt, whatever, and that you're going to take that information and run with it and do great things with it. And that's what I want for everybody. I want everybody to be the best they can possibly be, but they can't do that until they know who it is that they really are, what it is that they really want of life, and then go for the gusto. Make a plan to go for the gusto. And if you have things that limit your ability to do that, figure out a way to get around them. Figure out a way to get somebody to help you to do them. Or if it's like impossible, figure out a way to modify your goal so you can still get as much out of it as you can. You can't give up on yourselves, but you have to know who you are. And every time you escape and avoid by eating comfort food, doing drugs, going for another sexual encounter, buying another, you know, house in the Bahamas or, you know, $1 million, you know, guitar from Eric Clapton or whatever, you know, that's nice, but that's not going to tell you who you are. Take time to know yourself, honestly. Take time to examine your life. Make your life count. Because when you do, I think you're going to find a lot of really cool stuff that you didn't even know was down there. And my experience has been with most people that when they really, really, really take a hard look at themselves, 85 to 90% of the stuff that they were scared witless that they were going to see was all in their mind. It doesn't exist. It's not a tenth as bad as they thought it was. And things that they thought they couldn't change, they have incredible power to change. You know, that's why I tell people, don't just take somebody's, okay, I've got depression. Does that mean I'm always going to be depressed? No. You have a choice. Make a choice to not be depressed. Make a choice to figure out a way to get over the depression. And you can do it even if you have a genetic predisposition. There's ways to minimize it and get over it. So don't just pop pills and think you're, you know, destined to that. You're not. No fate except that which you decree. No fate except that which you decide to live. And if you decide not to look at yourself, you've made a choice there too. You've made a choice to limit yourself. And you have nobody to blame or be angry with or be disappointed with except you. You heard it here first, people. Take your power back. Look at who you are. Reclaim your power. Don't be afraid. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the life limiter. Do not be afraid. There is nothing to be afraid of. You know, there is nothing to fear but fear itself. And you've heard that before from people a lot better and smarter than I am, right? Examine your life. Do it wisely. Use the time and energy that you invest in other things, whether it's working out the stock market. Use some of that energies and smarts on yourself to be the best person you could possibly be for nobody else but you. Don't do it for your wife, your son, your husband, your boyfriend, whatever. Do it for you because you matter. Take your power, know your power, live your power. Be happy and well always. I'll be doing another one of these podcasts in a couple of weeks or so. I'm pretty much fully recovered. I'm back in the gym. I've been given license to go back in the gym by my post-operative people. So I'm back in doing my workouts again and claiming my pitiful physical power as much as I possibly can. So Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm not. Right? So be well always, and thanks for listening, and I'll get back at you with something coming up really soon. Thanks. Be well always. Bye-bye.